Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast. Today, my guest is Mark Garduno from the Delaware State VFW, where he's the commander of the VFW. He's here today to talk a little bit about the VFW and the wide array of projects that they're involved in that assist veterans as they transition from military to civilian life. So, Mark, thanks for joining me, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do with the VFW?
Wonderful. Thanks, Scott. First of all, up front, just thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you on your podcast. It's really a great opportunity to showcase the veterans of foreign wars and what we do in the community, what we do for veterans and their families. I joined the military. I went into the Army in 1987, just about 2 months to the day when after I graduated from high school. So I'm already in boots at that point. I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I served in human resources field. I ended up retiring as a Chief Warrant Officer 3 in human resources back in 2008. Great experience. I don't second guess it. Don't regret anything. It's made me the person who I am, a better leader, a better organizer, person as a whole, involved in the community and wanting to give back to veterans, just as the country has given to me. I'm originally from a small town in northern Jersey, just outside of New York City, called Richfield Park. There I went to Richfield Park High School, and like I said, I went into the military from there. After service, I settled down here in Delaware, and as you mentioned before, I'm serving as the state commander for the Veterans of Foreign Wars here in the state of Delaware. I have two fully grown children. The youngest one just graduated from college in the spring, and I have a wonderful, supportive wife who I don't know who I would be or what I'd be doing without her. So that's me in a nutshell.
Great. Yeah. And I think I can probably echo that same sort of sentiment with my wife. You know, I don't know really where I'd be or, you know, who I'd be without her. So, that's sort of a, to me anyways, a something that strikes home a little bit there. So, so great. So, know a little bit about you and kind of your background. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, especially with regards to the VFW and the newer era of veterans that are coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, out of those wars, is the common misconceptions that a lot of the younger veterans have about the VFW. I know for me, before I really started looking into what the VFW was all about, to me, it was just one of those things that, you know, people from my grandparents' generation would go and hang out there, you know, kind of an old man's club type of thing. And one veteran I spoke to recently said he thought of the VFW as kind of like a drinking club for the Korea or Vietnam era vets. And they didn't really feel like the Iraq or Afghanistan vets would fit in there, like it would be a place for them. Now, I'm sure there's some degree of camaraderie amongst the members, and that to some extent, some of that is somewhat accurate, but I'm sure there's more to it than just that. So would you be able to talk a little bit about what it's like to be a member with the VFW and what that's all about?
Absolutely. Scott, you hit the nail right on the head, and that is one of the biggest challenges we face as an organization. Within the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And I'm sure the other veteran service organizations throughout the country, whether it be the American Legion or the American Veterans, whoever it happens to be, somewhat face the same challenges. And we pretty much did it to ourselves. You know, we went out there and we focused so much on the canteens, the bars, and having that sort of an environment, the dimly lit, smoke-filled rooms with, you know, that veteran sitting in the corner or veterans in general talking about days gone by. Now, I'm not saying that none of those things are important. Quite frankly, the reason the club rooms and canteens exist is to provide the organization as a source of revenue in order to fund the programs they do. However, when we put so much of our focus into those into that area, then a lot of times we lose sight of what is most important. And so That stated, it's incumbent on us, the leaders of the organization, to do a weekend in order to teach and educate the leaders of the local posts what's truly important. Okay, so that stated. Now, for the younger generation of veterans, you know, you're right. Everyone has different tastes, likes, dislikes, and things like that. And perhaps that sort of an environment is not appealing to the current generation of veterans. And so that's why we have to do what we can to, number one, set up the necessary programs that this generation is looking for, or at least attract them to the point where we're open to ideas and suggestions from them. If they come in and they say, hey, you know, the standard pillar programs of the Veterans of Foreign Wars are important and we should continue doing those, but in this particular community, I think we would benefit more from this, or we would benefit more from that. And that's what's important. So we need today's generation of veterans, when they join our organization, to not simply look at what material benefit comes from it, but rather what they could do to help us change the organization in a path that's more conducive to support for today's generation of veterans and their families. And then as a equal opportunity, or just as important, is, you know, there's nothing stated out there that when a generation that when, if, you know, if there's a generational divide, that you have to join only existing posts, right? Mm-hmm. So what if today's generation of veteran were to approach the leadership of any department, which is a state entity, and say, hey, you know what? I think we have a good plan and idea to execute the Veterans of Foreign Wars programs, but be more focused towards this area. We would like to start our own post. It doesn't take a whole lot. It doesn't require a building, doesn't require a canteen to be attached to it, but it simply requires a small group of veterans that have a like mind and like desire and like, you know, feeling, and put that together, start a post, and serve perhaps the newer generation of veterans. And that's really something that we consider.
You know, and I think through the conversations that I've had with other veterans through this podcast, and even, you know, outside of this podcast, one of the things that I think a lot of people are missing in that transition from military to civilian life is the that bond, or that kind of unity, like you said, the like-minded people, you know, where when you're deployed, you don't have your family, your husband or your wife or your kids or your other family there with you. And so you sort of rely on the people who are deployed with you to kind of be a substitute for that family. You guys, you know, all the people look out for each other and, you know, treat each other sort of like a family. And a lot of times people come back from their deployments, or, you know, get out of the military service altogether, and they feel like they're missing that. You know, they go and they work a civilian job where people tend to be out for themselves, and it's a lot of lot less of that you know, bond that comes in there. But kind of what you're saying is, it seems like there is somewhat of that bond through the local posts and everything like that, through the VFW, where you can kind of connect with other veterans who are like-minded and, you know, coming from a similar background as, you know, the other vets who are there. And it seems like that could also be a good way for veterans to sort of get that bond, or that common connection back that they might seem like they're missing from that transition back into the civilian life.
And you're absolutely correct, Scott. Let me tell you, an organization like the Veterans of Foreign Wars, or just about any veteran service organization out there, you're going to have people who are there who speak the same language as you, and that's a huge gap that you have in a civilian community that is of particular benefit. You know, they understand all of those crazy acronyms that we use within the military, and so even active duty individuals who are still in uniform feel at home there, or at least they should feel at home. One of the biggest programs, and I would tell you straight up, within the Veterans of Foreign Wars, two of the most important pillars of our organization is number one, the National Veterans Service. And now, National Veterans Service are those service officers who are out there in the communities providing access to benefits to veterans who have departed, you know, putting in their claims, access to GI Bill benefits, all of those sorts of things, whatever it is that needs, VA, home guaranteed loans, all of that sort of thing, right? So they assist putting the veterans in touch with that. The other pillar to that is National Legislative Service. Both of those entities of the Veterans of Foreign Wars this year reach 100 years, a century of service to veterans throughout the country. So now think about this. We've been doing those two missions for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, or we've been doing those two missions for veterans longer than many of these generations, many of these organizations even exist, right? So if bar none, if there is an organization out there that knows the importance of these things, it's the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Now, we are recently started going down the path of putting together like a benefits delivery at discharge program, where we have pre-discharge offices at installations across the country. Right now we have 24 of them, right? Mm-hmm. But over the last, in 2018, we helped and we assisted over 109,000 veterans in submitting the new VA claims just in fiscal year 2018. 15,000 of those were new claims by veterans, just altogether new, meaning that, you know, separating individuals from the military came to see a service officer, someone from the Veterans of Foreign Wars, to help put their packet together. Now, when I retired from the Army back in 2008, the discharge office, the only thing they had there for us was, and we were lucky, quite frankly, I shouldn't minimize it, but we had a contractor who was contracted directly with the VA. Now, I don't want to downplay the importance of that, but, you know, you don't go to a used car salesman and ask that used car salesman to tell you the great things about used cars. No, you go to Carfax or you go to Kelley Blue Book and you get all the information about, you know, you question the source, right? So what better than to have a third party, an individual whose only focus is the veteran, him or herself, to ensure that they have the best access to quality healthcare or benefits that are available to them by going to a veteran service organization, and that person provides them that information. You know, so this is a program that, my personal opinion, Veterans of Foreign Wars could potentially expand on, and with the help of other organizations, create or assist with the revenue necessary in order to facilitate that sort of a program. So more and more we're going down that path, and this is why I believe our organization is relevant and timely to veterans who are separating today by assisting them to that transition. I would finish that by telling you this. You know, I always say that the military does a great job of creating war fighters, and that's what they're there to do, right? They are there to create the soldiers, the sailors, the Marines, you know, to make them the best fighting force in the world, which we are, bar none, mm-hmm. Okay? But then when it's time to separate, I think we could do a whole lot better at teaching and educating the separating veteran to become a veteran. That doesn't necessarily happen. Sure, they have the TAP program, the Transition Assistance Program, and all of that sort of thing, which is great, right? But now what happens when the individual goes, is getting ready to separate from the military? I would tell you, Scott, you know, those last 6 months prior to separation, the only thing we are typically focused on is getting out of uniform and getting back home. How quickly can I separate? And this is what I have to do once I get out. Hopefully it's go to school, find a job, whatever it is, right? But that's not necessarily the case for everyone. Okay, so they go through a TAP program at their local installation. Let's say it's Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Then when they separate, they end up, who knows, you know, maybe somewhere in the middle of Wyoming, right? Do they have a network of people there? No, probably not. Do they have the resources necessary in that location wherever they end up in order to network, find a job, and find the resources that are available for veterans in that local area? So why not look to the local Veterans of Foreign Wars to help in that process? And that's why we exist.
And that's, I think, a very important mission for you to have is to be that resource that's outside of the military. It's not necessarily connected to the military, because like you said, the military does a great job at turning out warfighters. The soldiers and the Marines, airmen, sailors and everything, they do a great job at teaching them their job and how to do the thing that they're supposed to do. But, they're not as focused on teaching them how to transition back into the civilian world, because quite frankly, that's not going to win a war. You know, that's not going to, that's not going to get our troops to be, you know, dominating on the battlefield. And rightfully so, I think, you know, they focus on the one thing that they do really well, and they do it really, really well. And that's why our military is the gold standard, you know, throughout the world in terms of, you know, our fighting capabilities. And
That's right.
But organizations like the VFW and other, you know, veteran service organizations that are out there, it kind of, sort of in a way falls on them to pick up the slack. And it's not, you know, a knock on any of the organizations, you know, in terms of, you know, the current state of, you know, veterans, you know, affairs and things like that. But it's one of those things that I think veterans just need to, you know, bite the bullet and get involved with some of these organizations, even if it may not be, the thing that they feel like it's the most comfortable, you know, situation, because maybe it feels like it's, you know, their grandfather's drinking club or something like that, you know, but they do need to get involved with some of these things, because that's where a lot of this change is taking place, and where a lot of the assistance that they desperately need is going to happen. You know, and even if, you know, even if there is a post where there's a lot of the older generation there, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing to have any of the younger generations kind of mixing in with the older, you know, generations either.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I read somewhere that both the older eras, you know, the World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the, you know, that era, and the more recent, war, kind of era, of veterans, through the VFW and other organizations like this, you know, when they do get together, they tend to swap stories, you know, the typical war story type thing that you might think about, but about each other's service. And they tend to, you know, somewhat impress the other generations. The older guys impress the younger guys, and vice versa, where the younger guys are maybe in awe of the stories about World War II vets storming the beaches of Normandy or something like that, whereas the older vets might be shocked at, you know, the fighting conditions of the younger generations, where they have to deal with an enemy that doesn't even wear a uniform, and they just kind of blend into the civilian population, like you might see in Iraq or Afghanistan. And so, you know, those types of things, you know, commingling, I think, can help each other, not only the younger generations helping out the older generations, but also the vice versa, where they can, you know, help build that kind of community and camaraderie there too.
You bring up good points, and in a typical social setting, you're going to have, there's not going to be much of an issue when it comes to that. And so, you know, Scott, in a typical social setting, you're absolutely correct. You get the slightly older generation of veteran together with today's veteran, and they'll start swapping those stories, and that's wonderful, right? The concern might come up where, in today's generation of veteran, where that I see and that concerns me is when you have a female veteran come into the post home, whether it's in the canteen or in the hall or whatever it happens to be, and she's looking for information about the veterans of foreign wars potentially joining. And the first thing they get is a glare, can we help you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. and do you want to join the auxiliary? And
sure.
You know, so it's that's the education process. And so number one, we have to continue to educate the members and the veterans that we already have, the members who are part of our organization. But at the same time, I would encourage female veterans, please don't give up on us, right? Just because you get that, please just, you've gone through a lot already while you're in the military, no doubt in my mind, but please join us and still say, yeah, well, you know what? I'm a veteran and I want to join this organization if you'll have me. You know, so I would encourage that to occur. Then the other part is when you go to those general membership meetings and proposals are being put out there, ideas for new programs, sometimes, you'll get that look from some of the older generation that'll look at that person and say, hey there, young pup, you're too young to know the ins and outs. Why don't you hang around for a while longer before you start voicing your opinion or providing input and that sort of thing. And that's just not what we're about. We should be looking and hearing and discussing, trying to figure out before we just absolutely say no, let's figure out how we can say yes and see how we could carve that into our annual program for that particular post. Like I was mentioning before, we have the standard organizational programs that we deliver on a year-in, year-out basis. However, each particular post could gauge their own communities and determine what that community needs in order to best serve the local veteran, their families, and the community as a whole, if that can be done, right? Mm-hmm. So I ask people, please, take a look at our organization and see how you could best fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you brought up a great point there too. And, perhaps as a male veteran, I hadn't even considered, some of the issues that some of the female veterans might have experienced by walking into a place where, traditionally it was probably dominated by, men, in those individual posts, and then kind of getting that look, so what are you doing here kind of thing, in that sort of situation. I feel like, the female veterans have been through just as much, if not more, as some of the male veterans. And, they have just as much right to be a member of this organization and other veteran organizations as any male who's ever served. And
absolutely.
So, definitely that was a great, key point. And I think, for any of the female veterans who might be listening, definitely reach out to the VFW or other, organizations that are out there for veterans and become a part of that community, because you're not forgotten in terms of, your service. Your service means just as much as any male, veteran service, and you should be, taking advantage of any of the opportunities that are presented through some of these organizations. Whether it's, through VA claims or, GI Bill, things like that, getting assistance with all that.
And if I may, let me just talk about that just a little bit. Female veterans, any of that may be out there listening. Let me tell you, I'm going to tout my horn just a little bit, because the post that I come from here in Delaware has, bar none, the largest percentage of female veterans in the state who are members. Not only do we have a lot of female members in our particular post, the post commander, female veteran, and the vast majority of the active members who show up month in, month out, and are helping to deliver the programs are our female veterans. So I'm extremely proud of that. The other part is, we are an organization who is doing what we can to support the female veteran on Capitol Hill. Last week, I was out up at D.C., and we were pushing the national legislative agenda. And part of the Veterans of Foreign Wars legislative priorities was that of female veteran health care. Now, when we realized that the typical VA hospital was built, structured, created, on average, about 50 years ago. What was the difference in demographics between back then and now? Well, clearly now we have just a much larger female veteran population, where I think Department of Defense-wide, we're probably somewhere between 16 and 18% are females. And so clearly we need to ensure that the VA and the access to health care also includes female-specific health care, because that's what's needed, required. Even the typical, say, post-op recovery room. Mm-hmm. Let's think about the scenario there. Why can't they make sure that we have the privacy requirements for a separate post-op room for females, or, you know, the cubbyhole type situation, so there's sufficient level of privacy once they get out of post-op? Neonatal health care, all of those sorts of things that we forget about as the standard, you know, male veteran, we forget about those things because, you know, hey, we're taken care of. But what about our sisters who are out there fighting the same dirt, living the same lifestyle, dealing with the same dealings and the same kind of Nazi leadership requirements that would roll downhill? You know, they deserve it. And here we are as veterans, and we should do everything we can to provide support for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of along that line, those lines with the legislative priorities that you were talking about, what are some of the other legislative issues that the VFW is involved with in terms of, you know, going to Washington and talking about, you know, making improvements for veterans and things like that? What are some of those things that you guys are involved with?
Well, the VFW has had their fingerprint, their footprint on just about every major piece of veteran-related legislation since our National Legislative Service began. Just earlier this year, we finally were able to convince the VA to drop their fight, and then we were able to convince Congress to pass the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act, which supports that. You know, there was this thought process out there that just because an individual was serving on a ship offshore in blue waters, right, that there was no way possible they could have been exposed to Agent Orange. Okay. And so how do you think they got the Agent Orange over to Vietnam? Hello? And then not only that, but then you had other areas where they where it was used as a defoliage type of agent, like the DMZ in Korea and other parts of Southeast Asia. So we have that passed. The post 9/11 GI Bill that we all enjoy, and now it's the forever GI Bill, which is, you know, something that veterans are enjoying for the rest of their life. They no longer have that cap, or if memory serves me correct, they have 15 years post military separation to use it or lose it. Not only that, but they can also pass that on to family members, children, or their spouse, if they so desire. So that's a wonderful thing. So some of the things that we're looking at now that we would love to get everyone's support, and you don't have to be a VFW member to contact your local federal legislator, whether it's someone from the House of Representatives or the Senate, and particularly the United States Senate right now, we need everyone's support to contact them and say, axe the widow's tax. We have this tax that essentially, you know, when you separate from the military, retire from the military, they have the survivor benefit plan. Now, this is a opportunity to have a portion of your retirement go towards this fund, so that if the veteran meets his demise earlier than expected, or at some point when that person is gone, the widow or the widower left behind, the surviving spouse, has this financial support, because, you know, once that person's gone, the retirement is done. But if they pay into that, the benefit is there for them. So now they have this thing where they say, hey, well, you know, spouses are also provided DIC. So if that's the case, then that's money that should be offset from the survivor benefit. Whoa, hold on a second. The veteran paid into that plan. That money is there. DIC is an added benefit that could potentially go towards that surviving spouse. So those are two completely different things, where one is a benefit and the other one is something that was already paid into. So that's the widow's tax. We went up there and we were fighting for that. And everyone seems to be supportive of it because they understand it. The only consideration now is that for the 2020 fiscal year National Defense Authorization Act, they didn't put it in there. So now when they go back there and reconcile, the potential exists that they'll drop it as something that cannot be supported because of funding or whatever it happens to be. So please, we need assistance with that. We're also looking at burn pits. here in Delaware, I'm trying to put together a survey so that we can get numbers to determine how many people are on the burn pit registry. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, these burn pits that were used in Southwest Asia gave out toxic fumes, toxic smoke. A lot of people are starting to get sick from that. So, you know, we're trying to get ahead of the game so that we're not trying to fight an Agent Orange-type battle here in 20 years when it comes to burn pits. We're also looking at veterans' health care on a continuing thing. We're supporting the Commander John Hannon Veterans Mental Health Care Improvement Act of 2019, and that's specifically to provide more resources and assets to better the mental health program, because I would tell you, Scott, you know, one veteran committing suicide is just one veteran, way too many. And although some numbers seem to indicate that the number is decreasing, quite frankly, when you look at it, they've essentially reached the plateau. It's not necessarily going up, but it's not going down. So it's reached the plateau, and it just continues to move at that particular number. We need to do what we can to decrease that. Plus, let's take a look at how some of the medical cannabis could assist these veterans, because we already know there are many states out there that have legalized it for medical marijuana usage for veterans, and it's showing that it's having a clear benefit to them. Then we think the VA should do everything they can to explore and to test and to come up with whatever it is that's needed to definitively determine that cannabis usage for medicinal purposes is something that should be authorized and put into use, and that the VA can prescribe it and do all of the things. Right now, the VA can't even consider that as a form of treatment for mental health because it's still an illicit drug.
Right, yeah. So I'm yeah, regardless of what's going on the state level, the individual states that are making it legal for medicinal purposes, the fact is it's still illegal on the federal level, and so the VA, being a federally run organization, is just not going to prescribe something that's illegal on the federal level, at all. So, and you mentioned another thing that sort of hit home here too. So we had talked about the medical marijuana on a previous episode, and we also talked about the burn pits on a previous episode with a veteran who actually served with my brother in Afghanistan, who is actually suffering from the side effects of the burn pits, battling the cancer a direct cause from the burn pits. And, it's terrible to think about, you know, so an otherwise young and healthy person who is, you know, just trying to, you know, go about living their life, and they're now dealing with a cancer that is, basically spreading and causing all sorts of trouble for them. Fortunately they're, in that particular veteran's situation, they're young enough so that they're able to tolerate the higher doses of chemotherapy that are required. But, you know, like you said, in 20 years, obviously we'll all be 20 years older, and, you know, we're not going to necessarily be able to deal with those high doses of chemo that we would need in order to battle all of that. And so, I know that the registry is a good first step, but, you know, you're right. We need to kind of get ahead of this so that it doesn't become another Agent Orange type of situation.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
You're absolutely correct. Absolutely. And, you know, the cancer is probably to the extreme. But what about all of the other conditions like COPD and things that debilitate an individual that may not reach the level of cancer, but the individual is fighting, combating, and, you know, while they're having to suffer through all that, they're trying to continue on with their life, do other career type work, whatever it is they happen to go into as a career, and this is preventing them or debilitating them to a point where they are not able to be as successful and provide for their families as they should.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Critically important. Yeah. Outside of that, I would also mention that we're working on Folk Rehab. We want to, now that there are no time limits or constraints when it comes to the Forever GI Bill, in when they're using that or how long they have to use it, we believe that the same opportunity should be available for Voc Rehab, that a veteran can use Voc Rehab at whatever point for the rest of his or her life. I think that's an important thing to also consider. And then lastly, as we talked about already, the transition program, we're still working in that. I personally believe, and we've mentioned it to the senators here in Delaware, that, hey, why can't we, you know, here we have a veteran separating from military service with probably a secret security clearance there, and then they separate, and now all of a sudden they're a security risk. So in other words, we asked, why can't a veteran receive a base access pass for, let's say, you pick a number, let's say up to 6 months post-service, and Department of Defense comes back, it's security risk. What?
Right.
The individual just separated from the military, so the next day they become a security risk? Come on. And so at that point, regardless of where they end up, whether it's near the base they separated from or back home, wherever that may be, they still have access, if there's a military installation, to go there and access resources. There's nothing wrong. I guarantee you, there is not a TAP class out there, a transition assistance class, where, you know, they attend prior to separation, that is so full they probably can't help another two or three individuals, right, to get them enrolled in there so they know where the network is or who are the local service providers in this area now that they decided on where they're going to separate to or finally set up their home. So those are the sorts of things that we're working on right now. I think the legislative victories that we've had over the last couple of years, plus what we're looking at right now, is extremely important. And I think that's what makes us, bar none, the premier veteran service organization out there in the country today, that are actually getting out into the community and doing what we do best by advocating on behalf of all veterans, regardless of gender, regardless of era in which you served, be it Vietnam, Korea, you know, even during Desert Storm or post 9/11, it doesn't matter. We're doing everything we can to assist you to maintain the benefits that were promised to you, and when needed, ensure that we get the additional benefits and resources to help you because of the service that you gave for our country.
Yeah, that's absolutely great, and I love the all of that, you know, in terms of how you are, you know, getting out there and advocating for the veterans and everything like that. It's really important that there is organizations out there like the VFW that are doing that type of work, because, you know, one veteran on their own is not going to be able to move these mountains, and you know, banding together and having an organization like this will certainly help with all of this stuff. And you know, you've already you know, listed off a number of you know, victories that the VFW has had, you know, legislatively and things like that. So I'm very happy to hear all of this stuff, and happy to know that there are organizations out there that are fighting for veterans, and so that veterans don't necessarily feel like they're all alone when they get out of the military service. So
yes, absolutely. And I would just so to mention, you know, I mentioned before that we're doing this for all veterans, not necessarily those who are members. You know, the benefits right. That we provide, anytime you go into a veteran service office, you don't have to be a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. But if you so choose that, and you're eligible, that after you were provided that service and you felt that it was a good quality service, that by all means, you should consider joining the Veterans of Foreign Wars so that we could continue our mission. Any individual, any service member who's eligible or would be eligible, provided they served in a combat theater of operation. But in reality, what makes them eligible is that campaign medal. You know, if they receive the campaign medal for service they did, or imminent danger pay, service in Korea for at a minimum of 30 consecutive days, 60 non-consecutive days, those are individuals who are eligible for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And I also want you to know that we have a supportive auxiliary out there. And this auxiliary works hard to ensure that they provide the supplemental support in our mission to deliver those programs that are so important in support of veterans and their families. So the auxiliary is also out there, and eligibility for that is being a part of the immediate family of that veteran, whether parents, brother, sister, children, or grandchildren. That's the extent of the eligibility surrounding that veteran in the immediate family.
Okay, great. And so that's those are the criteria for both the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the Auxiliary program. Those are the criteria to become members. Where can people go to learn more about either finding a post in their area or how to join or how to support the VFW, in their area?
I would direct anyone primarily to our national website, which is vfw.org. Right then and there, there are links up above on the top margin. You can click on the place that says find a post, and that goes by city name or by your zip code, and they'll pull up any VFW posts who are there in your area and what services they provide, or the individual could sign up to become an at-large member through that same website, and there is a link there that says join. And there's a lot of other information there. You know, there's also that ever popular list of member benefits like insurance program, financial services, and access to the magazine, the VFW magazine. So, you know, a lot of tangible resources and member benefits that the individual receives just by virtue of the membership. But it's the intangibles that I referred to earlier that are even more important, in my opinion. By all means, you know, if there's a local VFW post in your area, walk up to that when they're open and say, hey, I'd like to get more information to see what I could do to help you or what I could do to join.
And these posts are they're nationwide. There are posts all across the country, but also around the world, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I'm glad you know that. We have about 6,200 posts worldwide. We have an entire department, which is, like I said, a state-type entity. We have a department in the Pacific areas, which has posts in Korea, Japan, Taiwan, the Philippines, Bangkok, Cambodia. If I'm not mistaken, there's a post there. So there are a lot of posts in overseas countries that are serving expats, veterans who decided to retire overseas, or even the members who are serving in the military still overseas. And then we have an entire department over in Europe, serving countries like Germany, the UK, France, Belgium, Netherlands, and so Italy as well. It's worldwide.
Yeah, so that's great too, because you know there are people who are serving or who have served or are serving and found themselves overseas and are no longer in the States, and they should also know that they're not forgotten. You know, there are people out there who are going to be there to support them as well, even though they may find themselves in a foreign country, and as they should be. So thank you for all of that, and thank you for sharing, all of this background on the VFW and what you guys are all involved in, and I think veterans of the more recent post 9/11 wars would find themselves better off by reaching out to the VFW and other veterans organizations. To get that support that they need and help these organizations kind of push forward these legislative priorities like you had mentioned before, and especially going back to what we talked about previously, especially I would encourage the women veterans to reach out to these organizations as well, because they may just feel like it's a boys' club, and it's not and it shouldn't be either. So
that's correct. Absolutely correct. If I may, just one last thing,
yeah,
please
sure.
Visit that VFW.org, because there's a lot of opportunity for assistance there. If you're a recently separated veteran and they're in need of whether it be mental health assistance, you can click there, get some information, student veteran support. And we have a wonderful partnership with SportClips. They provide a Help a Hero scholarship that assists separating service people in the rank of E5 and below, because even though the GI Bill is wonderful, it really is, but it doesn't help the individual to the extent they may need. And so that scholarship program is there. There's also, we also have a national home out in Michigan, and these people provide access to or assistance, I should say, in the event an individual might need direction, maybe financial crisis, and they may be looking for a place where they can go for a respite and kind of get their mind intact. The BFW National Home for Children in Michigan, that website is out there, and I would encourage individuals to seek that information through there as well.
All right, great. That's a lot of resources. I'm going to try to link to as much of this as I can in the show notes as well, so that people can have a nice, easy place to find all of this information as well. So, all right. So thank you again, Mark, for sharing all of this information. And we look forward to seeing kind of how this helps out the veterans and the VFW in particular. So thank you. For anyone who's listening, you want to find out more information about the VFW, check out the show notes. I'll try to link to as many of these organizations and programs and everything that we talked about today in the show notes, and you can find more information there. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.